It's time to go out and...
Hey, everybody, from that chilly nightclub at the end of the world. It's actually a nice day here in the San Luis Valley in Colorado, Sunday, the 20th of January, 2013. We hit 40 today, and that was a hallelujah moment. Haven't seen that in quite a while, and I hope that holds on for a while. But in the meantime, of course, the weather around the world is just about as erratic as it can get. I got some things that are going to probably shock you when I talk to you about that tonight. But I just posted onto my Facebook page from the news links that are going to go up on CollapseNet tomorrow a story that a rice farmer in Japan caught from a website called Azizonomics, A-Z-I-Z-O-N-O-M-I-C-S, Azizonomics. It's got a breathtaking chart in there. The title of the story is called Declining Global Growth, but if you look at the graph in here, it's just breathtaking. What you see clearly is that growth is dead. Growth is over. Growth is done. We have reached the saturation point. Now, if somebody would just tell every other operating system, economic model, politician, and everything else in the world that's based upon infinite growth that that was the truth, we might have a chance, but I'm not going to hold my breath at this point. go check out the Facebook page for Michael C. Rupert, and you'll see that. So I've been living in my role as like tracker of truth this week, and there are some times when you're on a track and the trail just kind of goes a little cold, and you follow it for a while, and you're scratching because you have a decent picture. But there are some interesting snapshots from around the world that'll lead us to what we're going to talk about for the bulk of the show tonight, later on, which is about Jimmy Carter, who I just adore, and there's a lot of reasons to adore the man even more. What a leader. Anyway, but we will come back to Jimmy Carter later. Jimmy Carter, peanut farmer, yeah. Been married to the same woman for 65 years, and they are indeed twin flames, and this has to do a lot with the male-female energies on the planet. But let's talk about the weather for a minute. Let's just kind of sink into the enormity and the erraticness, is that a good word? The violence which with weather changes are happening around the planet. CNN played a 3-minute video today on their international channel from Beijing, and the headline was, "We haven't seen the sun for 4 days." No kidding. The video reported that people—it's all due to smog. It's all due to air pollution. You watch this video, and you start having a hard time breathing just watching it. People have not been able to see the sun for the last 4 days due to smog and air pollution. It's so bad that the city is virtually shut down, with people wearing face masks, locked indoors behind air conditioning systems. Some who are going out are wearing actual breathing apparatus to get around. Beijing is one of only 30 cities in China having such pollution. And what's the chief culprit? Coal-fired generating plants. Yeah, clean coal, that's Barack Obama stuff. Yeah, right. There's never was, and of course. Anyway, we all know that story. But that's as bad as it is in Beijing. Now, imagine that. Now, somebody has to tell them that infinite growth is over. I mean, we went through the at CollapseNet about 2 years ago, where China had to sell 42,000 cars, new cars a day, before they wound up having a traffic jam that took them a month to clear. And yet, that system, the inertia, the meme, is still continuing. But let's look at some of the other stuff. Here's another little tidbit today. The radiation, this is from Russia Today, fish with radiation over 2,500 times the safe levels are found near the Fukushima plant. I'll bet you they're still getting packaged and shipped off to somebody to eat somewhere. All you need is one tiny little bit of plutonium or cesium, you know, like a microscopic granule in your lungs, and you die from cancer a little bit later. 2,500 times safe. There's a lot of radiation floating around. Okay, let's stay with this erratic, all-over-the-map, crazy theme. Magnetic North Pole moves towards Siberia. There's a YouTube video that I also put up on the website today, scientific study, that the North Pole is moving in the direction of Siberia at 15 meters per day. Somebody did a calculation, said that was, I think, like 50 kilometers per year or something like that. I don't know, or 15 kilometers. It's moving fast. But the level of discourse on Facebook was kind of slim, boy, that the population has been dumbed down. Well, that's pretty slow, somebody said. And, you know, I had to retort with, the point is it didn't move for the prior 580,000 years or something like that. It hasn't moved at all. And the rate of movement is increasing. And there's some good Facebook postings up there with good science videos up there on my Facebook page. That make it very clear that the rate of acceleration is increasing, and you get to a point where the rate gets so fast, all of a sudden you have a pole shift or flip or massive pole dislocation within 24 hours. Now, for those scientifically uninformed, that would wreak total havoc with the planet's grid system, not to mention navigation. And it also is having, it's part of the symbiotic web of life and the relationship with the weather on the planet. The point is that Mother Earth is in motion, seriously in motion. Now, on January 17th, there were massive headlines all over Britain, code red, don't go out, massive alerts all over Wales and in the UK as Wales braced for like 36 hours of snow, and it was a major blizzard that hit Wales on top of other extremely erratic weather so far experienced in Great Britain. And in the meantime, it is an all-time record that there has been no snow at all this year in Chicago. Don't get caught in thinking about whether it's a little bit more here, a little bit more less. What we're seeing is completely abnormal weather all over the planet. The blizzards in England are going to continue into next week. The Met Office in Britain issued a rare take action alert for this week. Covers southeast Wales, but snow and strong winds are still kicking there. It produced major chaos throughout Great Britain. The Welsh alert warned of blizzards of 30 centimeters of snow, and that was very clear. Now, at the same time that all this other erratic weather is taking place, on the Extinction Protocol published 2 days ago, the 18th, the Great Awakening, 10 volcanoes awakened in 1 week. All of them were in the Kamchatka Peninsula, which is part of that same huge fault line, which also runs around Fukushima and Japan and all of that, and we've been seeing a lot of activity. Christchurch, New Zealand has just had, I think, its 10,000th aftershock. It's actually a pretty big quake. So we know that the Earth's crust is moving rapidly. I've never heard 10 volcanoes awakening that hadn't erupted in hundreds of years all in 1 week. What the Extinction Protocol writes about this is on the precipice of a shift. Geologically speaking, we may be on the verge of witnessing something unprecedented in recorded history as more aggressive change progresses within the interior of our planet. From January 6th to 13th, in a span of only 7 days, no less than 10 volcanoes were stirred into activity. 6 volcanoes in Kamchatka, I correct myself, along, are reporting activity. As the planet struggles to equilibrate, I'm not sure if that's a good word, its thermal cycle, more and more of the planet's systems that utilize thermal energy will be thrown into disorder. Tectonic plates movement, sea floor spreading rifts, seismic events, climate, volcanic systems, and ocean circulation patterns. Change has come to planet Earth, and the effects will only become more pronounced and extreme over time. Hear, hear. I agree. And from yesterday, Russia. Unrelenting snowfalls have caused unprecedented chaos in Russia. Over the past week, the country has seen scores of traffic accidents, flight delays, and in some cases, the complete isolation of some remote settlements and towns. While the snowstorms have caused inconvenience for large populations, centers in western Russia, they have been life-threatening further east in the country. And there are some amazing photographs that came with this of snowdrifts over 2 and 3 stories tall. there are reports of entire villages having been buried in snow, apartment complexes having been buried in snow. Of course, in Russia, I should read this with a Russian accent. The chair of the Duma's Transport Committee called for local transport officials to face legal sanctions for failing to cope with the winter weather. Until local bureaucrats face the wrath of the law, winter will always be a surprise occurrence. They will continue to do nothing as people suffer. That's Russian for you. I mean, when the weather gets out of control, just go out and shoot somebody. That has always solved a lot of problems. And in the meantime, down under, to all of my mates and friends in Australia and New Zealand, you are just roasting. Record broken in Sydney, Australia, 45.8 degrees centigrade. I think that's about 114 or 15 degrees, breaking the previous record set in 1939 by half a degree. That's the highest record. The city's highest temperature was a scorching 46.5 degrees recorded in Penrith at 2:15 p.m., while Camden, Richmond, and Sydney Airport all reached 46.4 degrees. That's hugely hot. So everybody is suffering. And, you know, Chicago is still, you know, waiting for snow, and people are walking. I mean, growth is dead. Like, the climate is changing. Mother Earth's in movement. And so, as I walk through this week, looking as I do every week and every day for inspiration for what to talk about on this show, I kind of accepted for myself that maybe that inspiration wasn't going to be here, and that's a good lesson spiritually in and all of itself, that there are times when one has to be able to sit with not knowing, with uncertainty. There's no clear direction of hope emerging here while all the indicators learn to get worse. So as a result, I started looking for songs. We have two songs tonight. And the one that applied to me most and the one that I resonated for, I didn't pick this until very late in the day today. I picked two songs. But it was a song that I've learned out of spiritual practice, and take it back to the book Siddhartha, I Can Pray, I Can Meditate, and I Can Wait. And there is an art and there is a spiritual power in learning how to be still even when you are faced with circumstances that you'd like to fix, that you need to fix. You don't flail. Sometimes there is tremendous power in just learning how to be still. And that is one of the greatest arts of the warrior, to contain and to be still and to hold that. And that certainly is what Buddhism teaches. And it's certainly what all the ancestors have taught us. So I went on the web to find this song, which was an Eagles song. But on YouTube, you will discover that there aren't any Eagles songs up there. That's because the Eagles have, you know, so tightly controlled their material, according to the old paradigm. And I can't fault them for that. Thank God there's a lot of videos up on YouTube by Don Henley, who I adore. And he doesn't seem to have a problem with that. But I couldn't find one of Henley covering the song, which he wrote for the Eagles. But I found a cover version of it, which is kind of appropriate for this nightclub at the end of the world. It's a guy who plays a really good guitar. He's on YouTube. And this is a song called Learn to Be Still, performed by a guy named Girish Pradhan. There's good wisdom in here. Let's listen to this as we get set up to talk about Jimmy Carter.
In paradise, as you stumble to your bed, you'd anything but silence. Those voices ring in your head. You thought you could find happiness just over that green hill. Thought you would be satisfied be still. We're like sheep without a shepherd. I don't know how to be alone. So we wander around this desert and wander following the wrong gods. But the flock cries out for another, and they keep answering that bell. One more starry-eyed Messiah meets a wild and farewell. Learn to be still. Learn to be still. Now the flowers in your garden, they don't smell so sweet, so sweet. Maybe you've forgotten that heaven lies at your feet. Yeah. There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the world is torn and shaken, even if your heart is breaking, it's waiting for you to awaken, and someday you will. Learn to be still. Learn to be still. Just keep on running. Just keep on running.
To be still. That is a weapon. That is a tool, and that is something that that has sustained me throughout a long lifetime of going, somebody needs to pay attention to what I'm saying here. Over about four decades of that for me, three and a half decades, and that is an art, and that is a skill that I am revisiting now and repracticing now, because a lot's been said and done. We're at a little moment in time where so many pieces are in place for either the end of the old world or the beginning of a new one and a change in consciousness. And we hope and we pray for miracles, and we wait for those, and we wait for the 100th monkey, and we do what we can. But we are still now living in the dawning full awareness that all of the old system has to come down before anything can be fixed. The inertia of the meme is too great. The meme has to die. And only at that point will we have a blank slate where we can do something. But it has to do with killing sacred cows. So let me talk about President Jimmy Carter before we go to break. I'm going to read something that he wrote today. And then after that, after break, after we come back from break, we'll take your calls. I want to hear from all you guys tonight. Anybody's got anything on your mind, on your chest, what's eating you, about what's going on, the number is 1-888-874-4888. We will get to your calls probably just after the break. At the bottom of the hour. But Jimmy Carter, who my personal history is so wound with Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter was president of the United States in 1978, the end of 1978, when I and my lawyer wrote to all over his administration, to his Attorney General Griffin Bell, to the FBI, to the CIA, we wrote to everybody, and got on record to complain about CIA dealing drugs. And of course, historically, now looking back, I see that the life of the presidential life of Jimmy Carter, and my journey through the bowels of the world of covert operations, intelligence, espionage, dirty tricks, and all of that. Our stories are inexorably woven together in an amazing web. But I have admired the man because so much because he led, because he told the truth, because he took unpopular positions. But Jimmy Carter is also a former president who is pretty much revered around the world by most sentient human beings just for his absolute and abject decency. And his word is good. He monitored elections all over the world in the 80s, 90s, and up through the early 2000s. He's now like 88 years old, and he's in amazing health, and he's amazingly sharp. But he has he warned us about peak oil. He warned us about a great many things, and he stood on principle. And he and his wife, Rosalind, have been married now for, I think it's 65 years they've been married. Oh, and they are indeed a pair. They are indeed, as we might call in the spiritual world, twin flames. But Jimmy Carter wrote a letter, an open letter to the public this week, which I think might have been the equivalent of Martin Luther King tacking 95 theses on the church door at Wittenberg back in the 1500s, except for the fact that so much is lost now in this world of media, where we are saturated with so much and nothing is allowed to rise to become a super hit. I think that's intentional. But let me get to Jimmy Carter's letter. We'll talk about the rest later. The title of his letter, which was published on July 15, 2009. Good grief, I just noticed that. Why was it reprinted this week? Okay, anyway, it showed up on my website this week. Maybe he was further ahead than I thought, and here I catch myself. It's not Alzheimer's, folks, it's Alzheimer's. Jimmy Carter wrote in 2009, "Women and girls have been discriminated against for too long in a twisted interpretation of the Word of God." Jimmy Carter writes, "I have been a practicing Christian all my life and a deacon and Bible teacher for many years. My faith is a source of strength and comfort to me, as religious beliefs are to the hundreds of millions of people around the world. So my decision to sever my ties with the Southern Baptist Convention after six decades was painful and difficult. It was, however, an unavoidable decision where the convention's leaders, quoting a few carefully selected Bible verses and claiming that Eve was created second to Adam and was responsible for original sin, ordained that women must be, quote, subservient to their husbands and prohibited from serving as deacons, pastors, or chaplains in the military service. This view that women are somehow inferior to men is not restricted to one religion or belief. Women are prevented from playing a full and equal role in many faiths, nor, tragically, does its influence stop at the walls of the church, mosque, synagogue, or temple. This discrimination, unjustifiably attributed to a higher authority, has provided a reason or excuse for the deprivation of women's equal rights across the world for centuries. At its most repugnant, the belief that women must be subjugated to the wishes of men excuses slavery, violence, forced prostitution, genital mutilation, and national laws that omit rape as a crime. But it also costs many millions of girls and women control over their own bodies and lives, and continues to deny them fair access to education, health, employment, and influence within their own communities. The impact of these religious beliefs touches every aspect of our lives. They help explain why in many countries boys are educated before girls, why girls are told when and whom they must marry, and why many face enormous and unacceptable risks in pregnancy and childbirth because their basic health needs are not met. In some Islamic nations, women are restricted in their movements, punished for permitting the exposure of an arm or ankle, deprived of education, prohibited from driving a car, or competing with men for a job. If a woman is raped, she is often most severely punished as the guilty party in the crime. The same discriminatory thinking lies behind the continuing gender gap in pay and why there are still so few women in office in the West. The root of this prejudice lies deep in our histories, but its impact is felt every day. It is not women and girls alone who suffer. It damages all of us. The evidence shows that investing in women and girls delivers major benefits for society. An educated woman has healthier children. She is more likely to send them to school. She earns more and invests what she earns in her family. It is simply self-defeating for any community to discriminate against half its population. We need to challenge these self-serving and outdated attitudes and practices. as we are seeing in Iran, where women are at the forefront of the battle for democracy and freedom. I understand, however, why many political leaders can be reluctant about stepping into this minefield. Religion and tradition are powerful and sensitive areas to challenge, but my fellow elders and I, who come from many faiths and backgrounds, no longer need to worry about winning votes or avoiding controversy, and we are deeply committed to challenging injustice wherever we see it. The elders are an independent group of eminent global leaders brought together by former South African President Nelson Mandela, who offer their influence and experience to support peace building, help address major causes of human suffering, and promote the shared interests of humanity. We have decided to draw particular attention to the responsibility of religious and traditional leaders in ensuring equality and human rights, and have recently published a statement that declares, quote, "The justification of discrimination against women and girls on grounds of religion or tradition, as if it were prescribed by a higher authority, is unacceptable. We are calling on all leaders to challenge and change the harmful teachings and practices, no matter how ingrained, which justify discrimination against women. We ask in particular that leaders of all religions have the courage to acknowledge and emphasize the positive messages of dignity and equality that all the world's major faiths share. The carefully selected verses found in the Holy Scriptures to justify the superiority of men owe more to time and place and the determination of male leaders to hold on to their influence than eternal truths. Similar biblical excerpts could be found to support the approval of slavery and the timid acquiescence to oppressive rulers. I am also familiar with vivid descriptions in the same scriptures in which women are revered as preeminent leaders. During the years of the early Christian church, women served as deacons, priests, bishops, apostles, teachers, and prophets. It wasn't until the 4th century, that would be the Council of Nicaea in 325, that dominant Christian leaders, all men, twisted and distorted holy scriptures to perpetuate their ascendant positions within the religious hierarchy. The truth is that male religious leaders have had and still have an option to interpret holy teachings either to exalt or subjugate women. They have, for their own selfish ends, overwhelmingly chosen the latter. Their continuing choice provides the foundation or justification for much of the pervasive persecution and abuse of women throughout the world. This is in clear violation not just of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, but also the teachings of Jesus Christ, the Apostle Paul, Moses, and the prophets Muhammad, and founders of other great religions, all of whom have called for the proper and equitable treatment of all the children of God. It is time we had the courage to challenge these views." Jimmy Carter. Now, I just found this as I went into this. I thought it was new. I thought it was fresh. Forgive me, but this was 2009. But they say in God's world that nothing happens by mistake, and in spirit world, nothing happens by mistake. So as I read that, before we go to break here, I was so amazed at the synchronicity, the appearance of that message from Jimmy Carter with what I had said in my speech in Portland, Oregon, on September 11th, the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and what I said about a year earlier in my speech at Grass Valley in Northern California, that I flatly and firmly rejected the God of Abraham, the God that wrote Genesis 1:28, that separated man, human beings, from planet Earth and quote-unquote gave us dominion and told us to subjugate. It is the divisions which are killing us. Now, I don't know how long it takes for these things to trickle down, but as we go to station break here, we'll come back and listen to all of you. You guys got to help me out tonight. It's apparent I'm drifting tonight. I mean, and, you know, I've been working at this hard, so, you know, we get through this together. It's a tribe. We're going to take a station break here on the Lifeboat Hour at PRN.FM. I am Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. We will be back with you right after these messages.
You might even get away.
fading out here in a second. Maybe it won't be fading out. Maybe we shouldn't dig too deep. Maybe we should. Chris Weygaard is part of New White Trash, and New White Trash has 19 new songs. We're going to stick with the old band name. That's who we are. And we're starting to polish some of them up. It's hard with very little money and no equipment, but boy, the Muse has been squeezing some amazing music out of us. I got an email a while ago from fan friend Leslie Klein Capel. Hi, Mike. Just curious to know your thoughts on the recent news article, Japan vowing to go green energy by 2040 and currently building the largest wind farm on the planet, too little, too late. Of course it's too little, too late. There's a bridge in Brooklyn. They're going to deliver you clean coal any minute. They're going to restore us to infinite economic growth. These people are lying there out of their minds. And I can't believe that anybody even bothers to listen to those stories like that anymore. For the record, for those of you who haven't been following as closely as I did at my old blog, at From the Wilderness, at CollapseNet, and in my books, they've killed alternative energies. The monetary paradigm will not allow alternative energies to succeed, and they're full of faults that cannot replace that. Japan's going back to reopen nuclear plants. They're even talking about building some new ones. And yet we buy the press release, and how eagerly we look forward to the, something else we can hang our hat on for a while. But that's one of the most frustrating things about the world of media and entertainment or news now, is that, I grew up watching the Vietnam War, and I was in high school, but I saw the power of American media then. When you had CBS, NBC, ABC camera crews out there in the boonies with the troops, uncensored reports, and it was the media coverage of the Vietnam War which showed the American people and the world how ugly it was, that helped bring that war to an end. It was only about 3 million casualties, 58,000 Americans. That's a lot. But there was power then, and this is also something that was so unique about the 1960s, in that, like, for example, when the Beatles or the Birds came along, or, major groups and major songs, the media was, there were many, many, many fewer outlets. So there was the possibility for a really amazing piece of, whether it be music, a movie, a book, a song, to capture a lot of attention, to reach a large percentage of the populace. But in the world of, and I'm experiencing this both on the musical front, and there's, again, something that's been developing for quite some time now, about 4 or 5 months, in LA that I can't talk about. But let's say the world of television. It's so fragmented, so very few people watch television anymore, that there's no one monster show. Like, you knew, I think it was on Tuesday nights when I was at high school, everybody went home, or Thursday nights, to watch Laugh-In with Goldie Hawn and Ronan Martin and all of that. And I am absolutely convinced that one of the agendas of the powers that were, just like I once said on this radio show, a high-level CIA guy once told me that William Casey, when he was sworn in as director of Central Intelligence, said that we will know that we have been successful when everything the American people believe is false. Well, they will also know that they've been successful when even the most amazing part of art or journalism is buried in an avalanche of bullshit. You can't find it. And that's the power. That's why we have no mega hits anymore. We have no mega blockbuster movies. And some people say that's good, but I look at this and I say that it's pretty apparent to me that it's been engineered that way, because there are so many voices crying out so eloquently now for change, and none of them can get through. I mean, my newsletter was called From the Wilderness, as in a voice crying in the wilderness, alluding to John the Baptist, someone say, hey, pay attention. But I am not a voice crying in the wilderness anymore. My aspiration spiritually is to be a wilderness, and I'm crying through the voices. as are so many of us who all see the same thing, and yet we appear to be scattered and divided. This is why I'm so hungry for a miracle, why we all are. The number to call, if you want to call in tonight, please call in, talk to me, help me out here. We got a few minutes left to go. I want to hear what's on your mind tonight, because I'm drifting, and I'm man enough to admit that. I've been doing the show for 3 years. It's not that I'm out of ideas. Nothing horribly inspired me this week except for a three-year-old article from letter from Jimmy Carter. Holy cow, where did we go with that? Anybody in that place with me? There are a couple of things that are pretty scary out here, and I mention them not because I want to go back into the focusing on hundreds of news stories, but we have talked quite a bit over time about the South China Sea and the disputed islands between Japan, China, and actually Vietnam, the Philippines. They're all players in that game, but it has now evolved into what is looking to be a very serious and potentially devastating clash between China and Japan. And there are a couple of stories that will be on the World News Desk at CollapseNet tomorrow, and I want to draw your attention to these. This is a story from News Daily. It's actually a Reuters story. Clinton assures Japan on islands, invites Abe, that's the new Japanese Prime Minister Abe, to the United States in February, Washington, January 18th. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton assured Japan on Friday of U.S. support in Tokyo's dispute with Beijing over a string of islands and invited new Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe to Washington in late February for a meeting with President Obama. Now, this is a quote from Hillary Clinton. Our alliance with Japan remains the cornerstone of American engagement with the region, Clinton told reporters, noting a wide range of cooperation on everything from disaster relief to the standoff over nuclear North Korea. Now, historically, let's go back and refresh this. Japan has been the center point of U.S. Geostrategy since the end of World War II, when Douglas MacArthur went there and set up the Constitution. There are so many treaties and documents confirming anybody shoots at Japan, it's war with the United States. That's been made clear for more than 60 years now, and that's why the situation with China is so serious. Now, I've written in Crossing the Rubicon from the Wilderness and for many years since that as peak oil takes its effect and as the energy goes away, the energy that binds Japan, all that great geographic distance away to the United States, will not be there, and it will either manifest as lack of money, resources, or whatever. I wrote, I think, in 2004 that Japan would inevitably fall into the Chinese sphere of influence, but the United States has drawn a line in the sand. Now, there's a separate story here, but we do have a caller. Henry from Missoula, Montana, says you want to talk something about 95 Theses and Martin Luther. Fire up, buddy. Are you there?
Yeah, Mike, how are you doing tonight?
All right, man.
Hey, something interesting. I went to graduate school on ministry. And one of the things that we were taught, this is about 10 years ago, mm-hmm. was that the 95 Theses were never nailed to the door of the Wittenberg Church.
Oh, no.
No, they were submitted to the Catholic Church, but that Martin Luther would never have embarrassed the church authorities by nailing it to the wall. And the first time it was ever mentioned that it was nailed to the door of the church was 100 years later.
And you see? It's amazing how myth and the meme weave into all of this. No one can dispute the importance of the 95 Theses, and Luther's obviously justified challenge to a totally corrupt church at the time. But I wonder how that weaves into all of this. But are we going to have to wait that long before any kind of an awakening hits us, or? Here's a question let me just throw back at you, because you've been at this. All of that Reformation, all of the Reformation and probably the part of the Renaissance was attributed to the printing press and the fact that people could suddenly read and have access to material, which opened one door. But I'm wondering if that door hasn't been closed now because we're just buried in a mountain of stuff that nobody has all the time to read and not everybody can even agree what to talk about. What do you think?
I think you're probably correct on it. Information overload is something that people don't know how to deal with. And the fact that we have the internet and everything available at your fingertips, it's being able to sort through the stuff that's the key.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 3 years as an intelligence analyst back in the late 70s, early 80s, and that's what kind of taught me how to do that. And then also into graduate school and postgraduate work. And you get into research, you know, which way to go, like what you've done. And I think the work that you've done has been very significant, especially your essay that you had on God. I looked at that in depth and read it and reread it, and I'm looking at some of the things that you have brought up. A lot of the problem comes, especially in the Christian vein, because of the numerous translations that are available on the Bible in every you know, book that's been in the Bible. And, you know, people don't want to vary too much from the first translation. If the first translation was off, it carries through. Also, the political climate in which, like, the King James was done back in 1611, that all has a lot to do with how it was translated and then the spin put on it. And once you get a tradition established, trying to change it is monumental.
That's the meme. I mean, the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD, I believe it was held in Constantinople, was where enormous swaths of Christian theology that had direct descendants from the time of Christ itself were just thrown out.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Rewritten. And yet the rest was enshrined. And so this brings us back to a great question. How do you fight this beast? Because this beast seems to be able to morph.
Well, the thing is that when people get locked into a tradition, it really just puts up walls around them, and it's so easy to stay in that. That's why denominations are so popular. You know, God is basically big business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people, the systems will defend themselves. You're well aware of that from your political fights that you've been in.
Oh, yeah.
And the same thing happens in the religious vein. I don't care which system it is, what the parent belief is. Once a tradition gets established, it will be defended.
And that's what we got to overcome. Henry, I really want to thank you for calling in. I got a few more callers stacking up, but I truly appreciate your call tonight. Thank you, brother. Joanna from North Bay, Ontario, are you there?
Hi, Mike, I'm here. How are you?
All right.
Those are great points being made.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, yeah, social contagion, that's a big one.
We need that. What's happening up in Canada with Idle No More? Is it really making a dent?
Oh, it is. It's just grown and exploded in popularity, and it's fun to participate in the sense that I feel I'm contributing on some level.
Well, what I like about it is it's all run by women, so I can sit back, put my feet up, and drink a beer.
Okay, don't bow out so quickly.
Oh, all right, all right.
I just want to make a quick comment on, actually, I got a great awareness through being involved with Idle No More, but just on your comment earlier about the 100th monkey, it reminded me of something that I'd read recently from the scientists at RPI. They have, and this is good news, they found that when just 10% of the population holds an unshakable belief, that their belief will always be adopted by the majority of the society.
Well, let's hope that all of this happens in time, because the great question is that we have so many convergent crises at the moment that are not, we're running out of wiggle room, if you will, all over the planet, especially with the weather now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think a massive change in human consciousness is the only thing that could save us, and that would appear to be. We hope spirit gets on the field here, and I am just so hopeful that the rise of feminine power and authority and a rebalancing can help us all come to our senses.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, I sent you a link for this great documentary I was watching tonight about just on topic what you're talking about. And I don't know, do you know the woman Elizabeth Satoris?
I've heard the name.
Well, she had a great quote in this documentary. May I read it?
Sure.
She says, "Again and again in nature, from the very most ancient bacteria to more recent species, they go through a juvenile phase of hostile competition to establish themselves. And then they discover the economics of cooperation. And when they find that it is cheaper and more efficient and more beneficial for everyone to feed your enemy rather than fighting them, then we are on the way to the new civilization we are all looking for.
Well, let's hope so. As you and I both know, and probably almost everybody listening tonight knows, this wisdom has been around for a long time. It's not as if this was just discovered.
But we're remembering, right?
Remembering or just having it reach that point. And you know, this is one of those weeks for me where I'm just going to be still and shut up and kind of try to create an open space, and hopefully where that can manifest. Joanna, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it.
Bye now.
Well, thank you guys for stepping up. Demi from Marin County, California. How you doing?
Happy New Year, Mike. It's Denny from San Rafael, California.
Hi, thank you.
Not too far from your old digs in Sebastopol.
Oh,
man,
yeah.
Has it been cold here.
Really?
Oh, it's been very cold. I have students that live in out in Lucas Valley, out toward the heading out toward the Skywalker Ranch, and it's like been 27, 29 degrees in the morning out there.
Way below freezing.
Oh, it's been pretty cold in the out near the San Rafael Civic Center and the San Rafael Meadows subdivision. It's been hovering anywhere from 29 last Saturday morning early to around 34. It's a chilly one. There's no
That's
question.
Really cold. I mean, if I was still in Sebastopol on my acres, I'd have been out having to cover my citrus trees.
Yeah, you would definitely have to be out covering your citrus, and it continues to be very chilly. It's really kind of wearing on people's spirits because we're not used to it. And, you know, I just wanted to say I love it when you have these sort of free-floating nights because I think you're at your best.
Oh,
it's
thank
like jazz
you.
Music. It's like jazz music. You are a very musical person.
Oh, dude, am I?
I can hear it in your voice. You have good musical instincts, and your radio show is like jazz. You know, you're at your best when you're improvising, I think. And so I really love the guys that called in tonight. They've got great things to say. I never heard Carter say such wise things before partly because, like you say, there's been so much fragmentation and fragmentation of the media as well. And I loved what you just said. I'm going to hang on to that note because you said you want to get sea spirit, get on the field. We all do. There's a certain group of us that are not talking very much, but we know about it. Spirit light needs to be on this planet more than it is right now.
Mm.
Like you say, spirit has to get on the field. And I'm so glad you made the transition to where you are now because that's where it's at, man.
Well, you know, this is all part of my learning curve. We never stop learning. And especially what I have learned is I have matured more over the last couple of years spiritually, especially with the influence of Native American teaching.
Yeah.
Is that what you do is you empty yourself. You empty your consciousness. You learn to be still, which is something I've known for many, many years.
Yeah, it's like Zen. It's like that.
But you create the open vessel, and that is so much a part of what indigenous peoples do when they pray and ask for a vision, for a dream, go on a vision quest.
Well,
and
I'm
going
to hold the thought that spirit's going to get onto this planet, just like you say. We need to make openings for spirit to heal the fragmentation, to bring more solidarity to the feminine here and the feminine within the masculine. And thank you so much. I continue to listen to you every week. My thoughts are with you. Keep going, man. Keep going.
Thank you so much. I'm sending everybody who called a big hug tonight, man. You really made this show good. And, of course, that just confirms for me that none of us do this alone. And we are all useless without our connections to the web of life, to each other, to the people of our tribe. And of our consciousness. And those were three really, really outstanding calls. I want to thank all you guys for stepping up. I mean, George Norrie should get callers like this. I'm just joking. Somebody's going to laugh about that. But I love the quality of people who listen to this show and who call in and who participate and who feed me every week, and you're feeding me tonight. There was one more story about Japan and China that I wanted to bring up tonight, because there is a sense of urgency to this. And I've been in near-death situations several times. I would say four or five times. I've been in positions where I said, that's it, I'm dying, I'm dead, it's over. And you experience a letting go with that. You experience a great release, one of the last of which was when I almost backed over a cliff with two pizzas in my truck. We won't go there tonight. I've taken my ribbing for that. But this is truly a place where now we have done
all of us who have cared, all of us who have put our emotional energy, our hearts into change, into reform, who have stood up for so long and done whatever we could do that we thought might help at the time. There's a point, and this kind of feels like that point, but Zero Hedge has a story going up. Now, this is the companion story to the story about Hillary Clinton saying, we're riding with Japan all the way in this military dispute, which is, in effect, Hillary Clinton saying, we are ready to go to war with China over control of Japan. That's what the issue is. Zero Hedge is posting a story which will be on the World News Desk at CollapseNet. I believe it's up on Zero Hedge now. Japan warns it may fire on Chinese aircraft over disputed islands. China retorts, there will be no second shot. Now, here's just a couple quotes from that. Japan's desire to fire tracer warning shuts as a way of frightening the Chinese. That's a typo in the Zero Hedge story. As a way of frightening the Chinese is nothing but a joke that shows the stupidity, cruelty, and failure to understand their own limitations. Close quote. Major General Peng Guangqian of the Chinese Academy of Military Sciences was quoting a saying by the China News Service and other state media. Quote. Firing tracer bullets is a type of provocation. It's firing the first shot, close quote, he said. Were Japan to dare to fire tracers, which is to say to fire the first shot, then China wouldn't stint on responding and not allow them to fire the second shot. Okay, so we say it's saber-rattling. We say it's rhetoric. But let's go back to where I started the show. Global growth is over. Growth is dead. And everything that's going on that's wrong in the world today, from the Algerian seizure of the, you know, from the rebel standoff over the seizure of a gas plant to Mali to the Straits of Hormuz, it's all about growth. It's all about competition. And so that's over. And yet, that the inertia of that meme is continuing on, so we need a miracle. And so as we do that tonight, I am going to probably close the show, and I'm going to leave you with one of the best, best rock and roll songs of all time. It was by the Byrds. The Byrds had one of the best bass players in the world. McGuire. I mean, oh my God, the Byrds were just—they were called at the time the U.S.'s answer to the Beatles. And as time has passed, they might not have done the volume, but the Byrds were just an amazing musical group with amazing musicianship skills and harmony. And I think they will rate up there just in terms of the quality of the messages they deliver. So I will leave you for this until next week, when I may come back with a whole new round of enthusiasm here on the Lifeboat Hour. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. I'm going to leave you tonight with the Byrds and turn, turn, turn.